Chapter 12. The Music of Strings. In this chapter, a brief history of strings. Defining strings. Strings generate gravity. The function of brains. At last, the time has come to get tangled up in string theory, the leading proposal for a quantum theory of gravity, and indeed for a unified theory of all of physics. It interprets the multitudes of subatomic particles as a single basic unit, the sub-sub-subatomic string, vibrating in different ways. To do is to be. To the endless consternation of grammar purists, English speakers have a habit of converting nouns into verbs and vice versa. To party all night, to Google someone you met there, to cook a romantic dinner for her, to, unfortunately, experience a disconnect. Linguists have a word for this. It's anthemeria. Since when is the distinction between nouns, what things are, and verbs, what things do, all that great to begin with? Modern physics elevates this habit to high principle. To our eyes, things are primary. They have color, heft, texture, solidity, and lots of gooey stuff on the inside. But as we dig in, their seemingly fixed properties turn out to arise from the actions and interactions of their components. For example, most of us blame the mass of our bodies on inactivity, but actually, the mass comes from hyperactivity, the way that quark and gluon particles buzz around inside protons and neutrons, like trillions upon trillions of miniature beehives. The gluons themselves weigh nothing, and quarks hardly anything. It's what they do, rather than what they are, that accounts for the bulk of atoms' mass. String theory runs with this idea. In fact, it makes nouns almost superfluous. Explaining all the particles of the standard model requires just one noun. A string. A teeny little cord. It has only one intrinsic attribute. Its tautness. Everything else about strings comes from how they act. Strings are as strings do. From this deceptively simple concept unfolds a theory of amazing richness. Despite its name, string theory is more of an approach, a set of ideas and tools than a full-fledged theory. Physicists have found multiple consistent ways to describe strings, each an approximation that applies under certain conditions. What the exact theory is, or whether it even exists, no one yet knows. String theorists call this ultimate formulation M-theory, but the M doesn't stand for anything in particular, deliberately. It is just a stand-in for ignorance. Like the standard model, string theory combines quantum principles with Einstein's special theory of relativity. All it does differently is apply these ideas to strings rather than to ordinary particles. Notice that I didn't include the general theory of relativity in this list. That's because string theory doesn't assume general relativity from the outset. It derives it. This singular achievement has kept string theorists going through thick and thin. A tangled tale. Even by Hollywood standards, string theory has an improbable story. Physicists fell in love with it, then broke up with it, made up with it, lost the passion for it, and then found it again. The first string theory was proposed in 1926, right in the swirl of the quantum revolution, and forgotten. Few string theorists today know about it. The modern theory had to be reinvented, or more precisely, stumbled upon. In 1968, Italian physicist Gabriele Veneziano at CERN, the European Particle Physics Lab, took an equation derived for completely unrelated reasons and noticed that it could explain particle reactions involving the strong nuclear force. Several other physicists, Leonard Susskind, then at Stanford University, Yoichiro Nambu of the University of Chicago, and Holger Nielsen of the University of Copenhagen, realized the equation made sense if they thought of particles as being connected by little strings. This concept was controversial from the start, and within a few years the standard model had won physicists' hearts, leaving the stringy explanation of nuclear particles in Nowheresville. In the loop. So I wrote up the manuscript. Well, they said, this paper is not terribly important, and it doesn't predict any new experimental results, and I don't think it's publishable in the Physical Review. Boom. I felt like I had gotten hit over the head with a trash can. I not only got drunk, but I passed out, and one of my physicist friends had to pick me up off the floor and take me to bed. That was tough. It was not a nice experience. Leonard Susskind, Stanford University. A few still saw something in the theory, though. In a gutsy move worthy of extreme makeover, physicists John Schwartz of Caltech and Joël Schurk of the École Normale Supérieure in Paris rebranded it as a theory not only of the strong nuclear force, but of all forces, including the most taciturn of them all, gravity. For the next 10 years, this newly expansive theory lived a lonely life. Some of those who stuck with it were denied tenure by their universities and had to scrounge for jobs. Finally, however, they demonstrated that the theory cohered, and a series of conceptual breakthroughs in 1984 fired the shots in what became known as the First String Revolution. By this point, Edward Witten, a renowned particle theorist then at Princeton University, had gotten involved. In a matter of weeks, the theory flipped from outsider to insider status. Physicists who had once derided it dropped everything to work on it. It helped that other approaches to a unified theory were going nowhere, fast. Within a few years, the revolution petered out, as revolutions often do. The theory splintered into apparently incompatible versions, and string theorists were strung out. Many physicists switched their focus to getting ready for the superconducting supercollider, a giant accelerator being built near Dallas. Then two developments, one negative, one positive, restored string theory to prominence. First, the U.S. Congress pulled the plug on the new accelerator and slashed particle physics funding. Pure theory began to look like an attractive career choice again. Second, on March 14, 1995, Witten gave a lecture at the University of Southern California that those in attendance still remember as though it were yesterday. He argued persuasively that string theory's multiple versions were not, in fact, incompatible. This insight re-energized the field and launched the second string revolution. It, too, burned brightly, for a while. Some physicists think a burst of developments 5 years ago, which included a new framework for understanding the shape of space-time, qualifies as a third revolution. But others wouldn't go that far, and if we have to argue over whether it's a revolution or not, it probably is not. Today, theorists' attention centers on the Large Hadron Collider and other instruments, which could provide some experimental guidance on whether they're heading in the right direction at all. What are these strings, anyway? According to string theory, if we magnified an elementary particle enough, we'd see a string, either a closed loop like a rubber band or an open-ended cord like a guitar string. By little, I really do mean little. A typical estimate is 10 to the negative 34th power meter, although one could be as small as the Planck scale of 10 to the negative 35th power meter. To such a string, an atom is as big as the entire observable universe is to us. Driven by quantum effects, strings are always doing something. They never sit still. They can move through space, they can wriggle, and they can wrap around things like an anaconda, a very small anaconda. Different vibrational patterns correspond to different types of particles. Strings can't vibrate just any old way. Like musical instruments, they can play a series of fundamental notes and their overtones. For an open string, like a guitar string, a whole number of vibrations must fit along its length. For a closed string, a whole number of vibrations must fit around the circumference, which makes them more like a bell than a guitar. These restrictions organically explain the limited number of particle types. The fundamental notes of strings correspond to the particles of the standard model and the overtones to a heavier breed of particles. A string can stop vibrating in one way and start vibrating in another, like a guitar string playing a new note. In this way, a particle can metamorphose from one type to another, an electron, say, to a quark, or even a particle of matter to a particle of force. Two strings exert a force on one another by interchanging a third string serving as a middleman. To create the middleman, one of the strings undergoes a process a bit like cell division in the human body. It pinches off and creates a new loop, which flutters through space and gets absorbed by the other string. Strings themselves determine how strong these forces are. One of the ways they vibrate is to pulse in and out like a tiny heartbeat. This vigor of this pulsation, called the dilaton, governs the gregariousness of strings and in turn the strength of gravity, electromagnetism, and the nuclear forces. The strength of these forces, which physicists often take as a fixed property of the universe, is the upshot of string dynamics. Definition: the dilaton is a type of string vibration that governs the strength of string interactions and therefore of all the forces of nature. The inner life of strings. Attributing particle properties to the internal machinations of strings is easier said than done because we run into a potential contradiction with special relativity. It takes time for influences to cross a string. If we wiggle one end, the other doesn't respond immediately. The effect must ripple down the length of the string. Consequently, what happens to the string could become ambiguous. Think back to the train examples in Chapter 3. One person sees two beams of light hit both ends of the train car at the same time, while another person sees the beams hit one after the other. For the train car, this poses no contradiction, because the train car is not really a single unit but a collection of parts. What happens at one end is divorced from what happens at the other. For a string, which is supposed to be as a single unit, we might get odd reversals of cause and effect. Some people might see the string respond even before we start wiggling it, which is tantamount to time travel. What's remarkable about strings is that they can behave consistently in spite of it all. People may disagree on the position of events, but they agree on the timing, so a string acts as a unit after all. Because of the way events are defined for strings, the spread in position does not imply a spread in time. The position ambiguity is a positive benefit of the theory. Whereas the standard model crams an entire particle interaction into one infinitesimal point, string theory gives particles some breathing room to do their thing. To stay consistent, strings must meet certain criteria, which are so restrictive that it's amazing strings can satisfy them at all. The criteria underpin the predictions of string theory. In this way, string theory takes one of the potential showstoppers of quantum gravity and adopts it as an organizing principle. The key is that strings have both an inner and an outer space. If you view a moving string in space-time, it traces out either a tube, if it's a closed string, or a ribbon, if it's an open one. To specify a location on this surface, you need two numbers, like latitude and longitude on Earth's surface. For the string, one number gives the position along the string. The other gives the internal time for the string. All the real action takes place on this surface, known as the world sheet, the inner space. Definition: the world sheet is the two-dimensional surface that strings trace out as they move through space-time. The processes are then translated into events occurring in ordinary space-time, the outer space. In string theory, ordinary space-time is really a secondary concept. What connects inner to outer is that the string arranges itself to minimize its area in space-time. In other words, strings do the least amount of work they can get away with. Many of us could sympathize. Because strings are featureless, nothing singles out any particular location along them as special. Strings have no built-in concept of distance. The way we specify locations in their inner level is completely arbitrary. You could use a wooden ruler with regular markings, I could use a swizzle stick with randomly spaced scratches, and we'd both make the same predictions for how the string acts. If I were in a mischievous mood, I could even measure everything backward, so that when distance doubles for you, it halves for me. There's no objective distinction between short and long distance. For this reason, string theory doesn't get into any of the troubles with infinitesimal distances that ordinary quantum theory does. Gravitating to strings. Among the criteria governing strings' behavior, one stands out as the reason so many physicists are wrapped up in string theory. A closed string can vibrate by expanding in one direction and squeezing in the perpendicular direction, then squeezing in the first direction and expanding in the second, back and forth, over and over. And that's just what gravitational waves do. So a string vibrating in this way must be acting as a graviton. Firing off gravitons is how particles exert the force of gravity on one another. When gravity kicks in, ensuring consistency becomes even trickier than usual. The string vibrates and moves in a curved space-time, and it takes an additional constraint to maintain order. This constraint turns out to be none other than the general theory of relativity. Whereas standard quantum theory buckles if you try to force-fit general relativity in, string theory unravels if you leave it out. If you had never heard of general relativity, you could deduce it by studying strings. No other proposed unified theory of physics can claim such a feat. All tangled up. Are the strings little cords connecting particles? It's tempting to think of gravity as a bungee cord extending from the center of Earth to a satellite, holding it in orbit. It's tempting, but wrong. A vibrating loop behaves like a graviton, and this graviton then flies across space and does its thing. In other words, forces are still transmitted by particles, as in the standard model. It's just that the particles themselves are strings vibrating in a certain way. What's more, the fact that strings extend over space solves the paradox of the graviton. Although the stringy graviton loops can split into new loops, which can themselves break up and so on, this chain reaction eventually comes to an end when the loops are too small to divide any further, keeping gravity from spiraling out of control. One downside is that, like the troublesome graviton theory, string theory doesn't treat space-time as fully malleable. Gravitons transmit the force of gravity between bodies, but don't re-sculpt the space-time around them. The way the theory handles the malleability of space-time is indirect. It allows space-time to take on different shapes and provides a set of rules for relating one shape to another. Ideally, though, a quantum theory of gravity should describe how the shapes morph. String theory provides a series of snapshots, but ultimately, theorists would like a movie. Brain bogglers. Strings promise to explain all the known particles and forces of nature. For this purpose, they're ideal. One-dimensional objects are just big enough to solve the riddles of particles, yet are not so big that they threaten to behave inconsistently. But why stop at the known particles and forces? What unknown things might lie out there? Physicists have found the theory also predicts novel objects from two-dimensional membranes that stretch across space like drumheads to lower and higher dimensional versions known as brains. A word that not only generalizes the concept of membrane, but also allows for lots of puns and wordplay, which mischievous physicists have taken full advantage of. P-brain, brain scan. Definition. A brain, B-R-A-N-E, is a two-dimensional membrane or analogous object in lower or higher dimensions. A zero brain is a point. A one brain is a type of string. A two-brain is a sheet, and a three-brain is a solid body. The higher-dimensional brains are heavier, so they take more energy to create and are proportionately rarer. Brains exert forces on one another, buzz around like molecules in a gas, and orbit one another like planets and moons. You can even have anti-brains that act like antimatter, capable of destroying any ordinary brains they encounter. One type of brain plays a special role, the D-brains. The D comes from Dirichlet, which refers to the fixing of the end points to a certain location and is named after a 19th-century German mathematician. D-brains stick to the loose ends of open strings like a sheet of flypaper. An open string can connect its two ends to one D-brain or span two different D-brains. The string is then pinned down like a guitar string, limiting how it can vibrate. Our entire universe may be glued to D-brains, a concept that I'll flesh out in Chapter 14. Definition: a D-brain is a special type of brain that open-ended strings attach themselves to. Theorists are trying to decide between two ways of thinking about brains. Are brains secondary, maybe legions of strings wriggling in unison, or are they primary, indivisible building blocks in their own right? If the latter is true, zero brains could play a central role. These brains, which are really just an exotic type of particle, flit around and can cause strings to wriggle. It's a case of the particle is dead, long live the particle. Physicists took to strings to get around the contradictions posed by quantum particles. Yet many of them are coming back around to a particle-based theory. Unlike the particles of the Standard Model, zero brains don't arise from undulations in a quantum field, so they avoid the contradictions of earlier efforts. String theory has a strong claim to be a candidate for theory of everything, but this label is both its glory and its bane. It's the reason people get so excited about the theory, and also the reason it has gone through the cycles of boom and bust. People's prejudices about what a final theory should look like have colored their reaction to strings. A little expectations management would serve string theory well. The theory does well in the everything department. It's the theory part that still needs work. The theory has introduced physicists to a wide range of new concepts that will survive whatever ultimately becomes of the theory itself. The least you need to know. String theory once languished in the backwaters of physics, but has slowly become the leading approach to a quantum theory of gravity. According to the theory, nature's basic building blocks are strings. Each elementary particle is a string vibrating in a certain way. Strings behave consistently only if a large number of criteria are met, which gives the theory its conceptual power. Because strings have an intrinsic size, they tame the infinities that plague ordinary particle theories. Although the theory singles out strings as special, it has other important ingredients called brains.